might as well close the store. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working, we're not a working.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the January 23rd, 2000 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WFT, listener-supported community radio at 90.1 FM in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WFT.org. The views and opinions here are solely ours and are not representative necessarily of the station manager or anyone else here at WEFT. So now we have Tom reading a few underwriting acknowledgments.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEST and the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates the voice of labor for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who has some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's brand new poem for this week, first received recited live here on the Illinois World Labor Hour, is entitled One Time There Was a Dream. Also here with us today is co-host Bob Pelesny, our technical expert and advisor, who has some news and banner for us, and also Bill Gorell, co-founder of the Illinois World Labor Hour way back in 1996. So here's Tom to begin the kickoff of Workers' Interest News.
Mondragon International employs approximately 100,000 cooperative members and more than 260 cooperative enterprises, producing white line domestic appliances, office and home furniture, and sports equipment in more than 40 countries. On October 27, 2009, the United Steelworkers and Mondragon signed an agreement on collaboration in the United States and Canada aimed at adapting USW collective bargaining principles to the Mondragon cooperative model. The agreement stipulates that the goals of the collaboration are to develop and grow manufacturing jobs in the United States and Canada, and to improve the quality of life for workers, and to create sustainable jobs in a sustainable atmosphere economy that supports strong communities and sustainable environmental practices. Commenting on the nature of the agreement, United Steelworkers International President Leo Girard said, "We see Mondragon's cooperative model with one worker, one vote ownership as a means to re-empower workers and make businesses accountable to Main Street instead of to Wall Street." Bob?
Okay. Unemployment rates rose in 43 states last month, the government said on Friday, painting a bleak picture of the job market and illustrating nationwide data released 2 weeks ago. The rise in joblessness was a sharp change from November, when 36 states said their unemployment rates fell. Four states, South Carolina, Delaware, Florida, and North Carolina, reported record-high jobless rates in December. New Jersey's rate, meanwhile, rose to a 33-year high of 10.1%, while New York's reached a 26-year high of 9%. Analysts said the report showed the economy is recovering at two-week pace to generate consistent job creation. A lot of states that had started to add jobs in November gave up those gains in December, said Sophia Korpekic, managing director at Moody's Economy.com. Texas and Georgia lost more jobs in December than they had gained the previous month, she noted, while Arizona and South Carolina lost nearly as many as they had gained. That is consistent with nationwide trends. Employers shed a net total of 85,000 jobs in December, the government said earlier this month, after notching a small gain of 4,000 jobs in November. California lost 38,000 jobs, the most of any state, but its unemployment rate was unchanged at 12.4%, the fifth highest in the nation. That's because 107,000 people, or 0.6% of the state's workforce, gave up and stopped job hunting. Michigan shed 15,700 jobs, but 31,000 people left the labor force. That caused the state's jobless rate to fall slightly to 14.6%, and Michigan does have the nation's highest unemployment rate. Nationally, more than 600,000 people left the labor force in December, according to government data. The largest exodus from the labor force indicates that unemployment is a lot worse than the numbers suggest.
Okay, national call for March 4th strike and day of action to defend public education. California has recently seen a massive movement erupt in defense of public education, but layoffs, fee hikes, cuts, and resegregation of public education are attacks taking place throughout the country. A nationwide resistance movement is needed. We call on all students, workers, teachers, parents, and their organizations and communities across the country to massively mobilize for a strike and day of action in defense of public education on March 4th, 2010. Education cuts are attacks against all of us, particularly in working class communities and communities of color. The politicians and administrators say there is no money for education and social services. They say that, quote, there is no alternative to the cuts, unquote. But if there's money for wars, bank bailouts, and prisons, why is there no money for public education? We can beat back the cuts if we unite students, workers, and teachers across all sectors of public education, pre-K-12, adult education, community colleges, and state-funded universities. We appeal to the leaders of the trade union movement to support and organize strikes and our mass actions on March 4th. The weight of workers and students united in strikes and mobilization would shift the balance of forces entirely against the current agenda of cuts and make victory possible. Building a powerful movement to defend public education will in turn advance the struggle in defense of all public sector workers and services and will be an inspiration to all those fighting against the wars in defense of jobs for single-payer health care and other progressive and working-class causes.
As bad weather across the country hammers the construction industry, the housing market remains a significant threat to economic recovery. Along with the inclement weather, the real estate recovery is facing man-made headwinds. Last Wednesday, the government reported that buyers will face higher fees and tougher standards for home loans backed by the Federal Housing Administration, a popular source of loans for first-time home buyers. A significant reason for the changes is that unemployment is expected to remain high throughout the year, which will drive foreclosure rates to new records. The building industry has dramatically scaled back construction after the worst housing bust in decades. Many thousands of foreclosed homes have been dumped on the market at bargain prices that make it all but impossible for builders to compete. The FHA, being the dominant source of funding for first-time home buyers, said last Wednesday it was raising fees and standards for borrowers in order for them to qualify. The FHA does not actually make the loans, but rather offers insurance against default. While home construction employment usually snaps back at the start of an economic recovery, many experts feel that the current housing and financial crises of our nation are only contributing to unemployment and homelessness, and there needs to be some relief, and that in the form of jobs, and not multi-million dollar bonuses to the CEOs who crippled our economy.
I just want to make a comment on that. I don't work in the housing construction, except we do the infrastructure for housing additions, and that's not the problem with a lot of us. The problem is we can't get Obama to spend any money on us. You know, the stimulus, basically I was watching a Grit TV segment with Laura Flanders, and one of the experts on there said that the stimulus package basically kept a lot of educators and medical people in their jobs. What I saw around here on construction was it didn't add any jobs. There were just a few contractors whose deeply core employees were kept on. It did no good. They didn't spend enough money, and they're just sitting on it, and I'm sick of it.
Here, Bill.
Okay, I got a new website that may help Bill out a little bit here. This is started. This is started by the IAM, the Machinists Union, and the website itself is unionofunemployed.com. And they say, with a new video, editorial, and a growing list of partners, the IAM Community Service Project, known as Your Union of Unemployed, nicknamed U-Cubed, is beginning to resonate among labor organizations and unemployed workers who have created more than 40 individual cubes to share their experiences and gain the benefits of collective action. With a new video, editorial, and a growing list of partners, this service project, using social networking tools like Facebook and Twitter, the word about U-Cubed is spreading from city to city, worker to worker, and from organization to organization. The AFL-CIO has joined the effort as a supporting partner, as have AFSCME, AFT, NEA, IUPAT, and CWA, and others. For more information about joining the partnership, contact U-Cubed at IAMAW.org.
Oh, by the way, folks, speaking of social networking sites, I'm really into Facebook. And if you're listening right now and you're on Facebook, or if you're not on Facebook, get on it and search for Bill Gorrell. That's G-O-R-R-E-L-L. And send me a friend request. And if you send that friend request and we're not personally acquainted, please send me a message with it so that I know, you know, why you want to do that. And anyway, get your pencils out. If you are on Facebook and you're not a friend of mine already, you can also search for, and this capital letters, hey, comma, AFL-CIO, organize, and then it's a small a, and then March of unemployed. Oh shoot! Million. I'm confused.
Million.
Yeah, here, Bob. Maybe you remember.
No, it's AFL-CIO.
Organize
a million unemployed workers march.
Yeah,
okay. And the IAM International President, Tom Buffenbarger, recently described what led to the creation of an organization that focused exclusively on organizing and assisting the millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans. And we have to do something, he says. And if the government can't hear the cries and anguish of American workers, then we need to magnify that voice, said Buffenbarger. This is where we hope U-Cubed will be our avenue. And again, check out Bill Gorrell on Facebook and the Hey, AFL-CIO Organize a Million Unemployed Workers March on Washington. Dave?
Okay. Since a devastating earthquake rocked Haiti last week, killing tens of thousands of people, there's been a lot of well-intentioned chatter on Twitter about how to help Haiti. Folks have been donating millions of dollars to Partners in Health, among other organizations. I hope these donations continue to pour in, along with more money, food, water, machines, medicine equipment, and doctors and nurses from nations around the world. The Obama administration has pledged at least $100 million in aid and has already sent tens of thousands of soldiers and relief workers. And this person considers it's a decent start, but I'll beg to differ on the military troops. But it's also time to stop having a conversation about charity and start having a conversation about justice, about recovery, responsibility, and fairness. What the world should be pondering instead is, what is Haiti owed? Haiti's vulnerability to natural disasters, its food shortages, poverty, deforestation, and lack of infrastructure are not accidental. To say it is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere is to miss the point. Haiti was made poor by France, the United States, Great Britain, and other Western powers, and more recently by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Now, in its attempts to so-called help Haiti, the International Monetary Fund is pursuing the same kind of policies that made Haiti a geography of precariousness even before the quake. To great fanfare, the International Monetary Fund announced a new $100 million loan to Haiti on Thursday. In one crucial way, the loan is a good thing. Haiti's in dire straits and needs a massive cash infusion. But the new loan was made through the International Monetary Fund's extended credit facility, to which Haiti already has $165 million in debt. Debt relief activists tell me that these loans came with conditions, including raising prices for electricity, pay cuts for workers, increases in price of fuel and food. More of the same.
There has recently been a grim sense amongst Democrats that if the GOP could win in a traditionally deeply liberal state, such as Massachusetts, they could probably win anywhere. Defeated in Massachusetts, Democrats last week urged the White House to focus on jobs and the economy rather than the health care overhaul that is now at risk. And they pressed President Barack Obama to forcefully make their case against the Republicans ahead of potentially disastrous elections this coming fall. On the day after the improbable Senate election of Republican Scott Brown, Obama and his Democratic Party raced to reevaluate their midterm election strategies to adjust their health care approach and assuage an angry electorate. The Democrats still have majority control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate, but last Tuesday's GOP upset for the seat long held by late Senator Edward Kennedy after Republican victories in Virginia and New Jersey last fall for Democrat-held gubernatorial seats was a sign of serious trouble to come this coming fall.
I have a comment. You know, Mitt Romney used to be governor of Massachusetts. I don't see why it's so surprising that they would elect a Republican senator anyway. And another thing, too, when it comes to the health care issue, he voted and supported, Brown did, I'm saying, and supported the current Massachusetts law, which mandates
that you have to have
insurance. Right. Yeah. So I don't know.
Well, I do, Bill, and I got some commentary on that later. This was a protest vote. This was a message to send to the Obama administration. I'll go into that more later.
I got one last story here about a Belgian beer blockade has been lifted.
Oh, all right.
a blockade that threatened to strangle supplies of top Belgian beers to home and neighboring European markets ended on Friday after management and unions said a compromise was reached. 2 weeks after workers first barricaded Stella Artois, Jupiler, and Hoegaarden breweries in protest at owners Anheuser-Busch InBev's plans to cut 10% of its European workforce, drinkers can breathe easier. After the blockade is lifted, the unions and management will start from scratch with meetings of the Works Council that will deal with problems site by site, union representative Tanguy Cornu told AFP. The protest action began after the group announced on January 7th that it planned to cut around 800 jobs in Western Europe. In Belgium, 263 of the 2,700 jobs at AB InBev, the world's largest brewer, were slated to go. The action achieved its initial goals, leading to shortages in large supermarkets and a spike in guerrilla sales tactics from rival brewers. France, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands were also threatened by critically low levels of stocks for bars tied through distribution deals. AB InBev produces around 60% of the beer consumed in Belgium's bars and cafes. And that's kind of what I was doing last Saturday. I took off and went on the Chicago Blues Tour and hit five different clubs up there, mm-hmm. a lot of South Side and West Side clubs. Saw about 7-8 different bands. It was a good time. We also had a few beers along the way there.
Okay. And can you name some of those clubs you went to so people might be able to visit them sometime in Chicago? They're mainly on the South Side, correct?
Right. South Side, West Side. We went to Lee's Unleaded, the Taste Entertainment Center, Linda's Place, and the Waterhole, and then kind of on the west side, northwest side, little was Rosa's. And we saw, Super Percy and a Soul Click band. We saw Fantastic Elroy and the Bulletproof band. We saw Taranzo Cannon and the Cannonball Express. We saw Shorty Mack at Lee's Unleaded, and he had a couple special guests, Ms. Peaches and New Orleans Bow, and it was really an entertaining evening, and it's nice. You get on these buses, these shuttle buses. They run you around to the different clubs. You don't have to worry. One admission gets you into all the clubs. You got to pay for your own beverages, of course.
But okay, well, maybe next year, a couple weeks before this event, you can maybe announce it to the listeners.
Yeah. Sure. I got a question for you, Bob. Sorry to blow in your face, but we all need right. more microphones.
Yep.
I was reading a recent interview with Buddy Guy in Guitar World magazine, and he was bemoaning the state of blues now, and that it was in real the market was in a really big decline. Did you get an impression like that in Chicago?
Well, no. It seemed like it was pretty hopping up there. You know, of course, we're on these buses, and when 30 people roll off a bus and roll into a bar, most of these clubs are pretty small places. They only have like maybe 75 or 100 seats in there. So when you get a bus rolling in with 30 people, it pretty much fills it up right away. Yeah, I'm sure in some respects some of the blues is kind of fading away. I know I've seen Buddy at his club up there, and he's bemoaned the fact of a lot of DUIs keep people out of clubs and stuff like that.
And let's not forget the smoking bans.
And the smoking bans. He's criticized both of those things, really. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, final story here, kind of in relation to Tom's last story. This is, believe it or not, this is from Richard Trumka, president of the National AFL-CIO. The wake-up call sent by Tuesday's special election in Massachusetts for the U.S. Senate couldn't be clearer. Working people are fed up with inaction in Washington and expect real results. We can't leave it to any political party to protect the interests of working families. It's up to us to organize and mobilize harder, faster, and smarter than ever before. Thank you, Richard. You finally get it. Okay, what happened Tuesday in Massachusetts was a wake-up call to all of us. It was a working class revolt, a signal that in this economic crisis, the American people demand jobs, real health care, and an economy that works for them now, not political business as usual. It was a loud and clear message that our elected leaders and our labor movement must do more for working people, do it fast, and do it smarter. An AFL-CIO poll taken Tuesday night shows without doubt voters are fed up that elected leaders have done too little to help working families. They said Democrats have not overreached on jobs as far as their efforts, but the economy and health care. In fact, they've underreached. Voters have seen too much help for Wall Street and not nearly enough to help Main Street. Unless Democrats demonstrate that fixing the economy is their overriding priority and begin to create more jobs for working Americans and institute real health care, that is the expansion of the Medicare program, not some corporate giveaway to the health insurance industry, now we're going to see more results this November like the Massachusetts election. For the union movement and activists, the message was also clear. It's not time to leave it to any political party to take care of us. We put them in office. It's time to organize and mobilize as never before to make every elected or aspiring leader prove he or she will create the jobs we need and economy we need with the health care we need. I am not discouraged by Tuesday's election results. Actually, I'm energized, and I want you to be too. Working America is demanding major changes now, not timid, go-slow, partial solutions. I know we are the people who can mobilize a massive army to force elected leaders to deliver. Let's do it starting now. And this was really inspiring to me, considering the fact that the organized labor gave over $40 million to Obama in his election campaign and donated millions of hours of volunteer rank-and-file time going door-to-door and working the phones to convince people to turn out and vote for Obama. Especially in these key states like Indiana, Ohio, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, all these states that previously supposedly went to the Republicans made the difference and got Obama elected. And what did they do? As soon as they wanted a little bit of payback as far as getting passage of the Employee Free Choice Act, Obama just basically shrugged them off and talked about a compromise of the Chamber of Commerce. And then just recently, 2 weeks ago, Trump and some other labor leaders met with Obama about this tax they want to put on anyone who has
40%
40% tax on anybody that has halfway decent health care coverage through your employer. He basically just shrugged off their concerns again and said, I'm still in favor of the tax. And they were able to negotiate an 8-year delay on that happening, trying to buy some time and, you know, maybe. But anyway, I'm finally glad Richard Trumka finally gets it. But then I go to a Jobs with Justice meeting this morning, and who do I see that the AFL-CIO endorses for the state Senate race? They want to endorse this candidate. For the Senate seat that used to be held by Barack Obama, Alexei Giannoulias. He's a corporate Democrat that supports the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan 100%. When are they going to learn? Come on, people. I think the State Federation needs to read Trumka's recent article, and also, they need to look at what the real results were in this Massachusetts election. It just amazes me. I mean, I've been preaching this on a soapbox about this since 1999, over 10 years, that you can't depend on one political party, especially one that you've given money to and volunteer time to, time and time again. And they keep stabbing you in the back.
Yeah, Dave, by the way, I don't know. I might have missed you if you had this poll result result, but Carl Estabrook reports through Facebook, quote, a poll conducted on behalf of the AFL-CIO found that 49% of Massachusetts union households supported Mr. Brown in Tuesday's voting, while 46% supported Democrat Martha Coakley. She should have driven a pickup truck. And
well, it's not, you know, that's kind of.
And posed nude in Playboy.
Yeah. Well. All superficial jokes aside, the thing is, as far as the actual campaigning, here's the thing is, Brown did go out and do a lot of grassroots campaigning, yes, in an old pickup truck. But however, this Martha Coakley, I mean, all she did was go to the country clubs and appear at various, corporate media functions. She didn't go out and do any door-to-door campaigning. Because here's the thing, the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, their attitude since Bill Clinton has been towards working people is, we'll do whatever we want for the corporate agenda that we're getting paid off by, because you have nowhere else to go. You're not going to go vote for Republicans. Well, you know what? I guess maybe times are changing, and it's probably good. Not that I'm advocating to vote for Republicans, but you know what? If these people aren't going to represent you, either vote for a third-party candidate like the Greens or the one party out in California. I can't remember their name right now. The Peace and Freedom Party, which is getting ready to go nationwide. Or just abstain. I mean, go vote, but when it comes to a particular corporate candidate, you got corporate candidate Republican and corporate candidate Democrat, just leave it blank. You can do that. You can vote for any candidate you want, or you can leave the certain race blank. It won't spoil your ballot.
Oh, yeah. By the way, too, folks, you can also now in Illinois register as a Green Party member because they have ballot status. And I have another message from Carl Estabrook. I'll try and imitate him. I lived in Massachusetts for a quarter century, from the time a young ne'er-do-well son of a bootlegger was elected senator on the cynical slogan, he can do more for Massachusetts, his brother being president, in parentheses. In that time, I lived in different sections of the city. My kids went to a variety of schools there, also during the, also during the busing crisis of the 1970s, and I participated in some extent to the city's political and cultural life. So I want to say that Coburn, he's got a link to a article by Alexander Coburn, is a bit over the top when he refers to, quote, a disgusting sinkhole of racism and vulgar prejudice, but I have to admit that it's at least allowable hyperbole in the midst of this best account of the significance of this election to the country and to the state that I've seen. And we also have Neil Parthen chatting here. Let's put in a comment. A bunch of education strike budget cuts in the local area are being discussed. And, yes, they were being discussed earlier this morning at the Jobs and Justice meeting that me and Dave had to leave early.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just in that regard, too, we're going to get Ricky Baldwin on the show next Saturday. He's going to be talking about this unemployed and underemployed workers organizing initiative that's going on locally as well as around the country through Jobs with Justice.
Yeah, and some people there from the U of I were talking about using the furlough situation in very creative ways to make a protest.
Okay, we're going to go to a little music, and Bob was able to edit this song, this next one. It's from
Repo Man.
Yeah, it's from the Repo Man soundtrack. It's by the band Circle Jerks, and I think in these certain times here, I think it's a pretty appropriate song, so we're going to play that for you.
A sluggish economy, inflation, recession hits the land of the free. Standing on employment lines, blame the government for hard times. We just get by however we can. We all got a duck when the shit's the fan. 10 kids in a Cadillac stand in line for welfare checks. Let's all leech off the state. Gee, the money is really great. We just get by however we can. We all got a duck when it hits the fan. Soup lines,
3 loaves of bread, 5-pound blocks of cheese, bags of groceries, Social Security has run out on you and me. We do whatever we can, gotta duck when the fan. Doobity-doo-wop-wop, say what, yeah. We just get by however we can. We all gotta duck when the fan. Soup lines, free loaves of bread, 5-pound blocks of cheese, bags of groceries, Social Security has run out on you and me. We do whatever we can, gotta duck when the shit's the fan.
Now we've come to that portion of the program for the Illinois Labor Hour Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas. And Tom, take it away.
One time there was a dream that shone bright as the sun through every day, giving our hearts reason to beat as long as with the dream we stay. We were as children in the dream, believing we were truly free, believing that all were equal and justice everywhere we'd see. One time there was a dream that dwelt in many a patriot's heart, a dream of life and liberty each human should have from the start. But our dream became shattered by bankers who owned politicians, the ones who try to make us think they truly are our patricians. They lie and cheat and steal from us by writing their unfair rules, and the dream becomes a nightmare as bankers play us all for fools. Just what kind of a dream is it when hungry children are not fed, where families must lose their homes because their debts are in the red? The Illuminati killed our dream to institute their own nightmare. So till we stand together as one, we just won't see that dream so fair. Shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm, standing against the banker's schemes, we must stand together as one if we are to reclaim our dreams. One time there was a dream was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on January 22nd, 2010 and was first recited live January 23rd, 2010 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Got some public service announcements here. Building and Rebuilding the Labor Movement, a class for Champaign-Urbana area students, unionists, and workers with discussions, movies, and guest speakers, sponsored by the University of Illinois Labor Education Program and the Champaign County Union Community Action Network, co-sponsored by the Champaign County AFL-CIO, Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, UIUC Campus Labor Coalition, and the Central Illinois Industrial Workers of the World. Classes will be held Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. from February 4th to March 18th at the Wagner Education Center, Room 43, School of Labor and Employment Relations, 504 East Armory Avenue in Champaign, right across, just north across the street from the Armory. Topics will be mass strikes in China and why we don't hear about them, what has happened for workers since apartheid in South Africa, why much of Latin America has turned away from the capitalist market as a solution to every problem, the condition and struggles of Indian workers doing outsourced work there, and how workers in Canada and Mexico are responding to the economic and political crisis. For more information on this class, contact Joe Berry at 217-333-2388.
And the IWW.org can now accept donations on behalf of the ISC Haiti relief efforts. On behalf of union workers in Haiti, the Industrial Workers of the World is raising funds for relief in the wake of the tragic earthquake that struck January 12, 2010. On the decision of the International Solidarity Committee of the IWW, all funds raised through these donations will be distributed to Bate, Overy, and the CTH, which is the Confederation of Haitian Workers, workers' organizations in Haiti that the IWW has had contact with. Since the IWW is a 501c5 labor organization, these donations will not be tax deductible. ISC Haiti support is for long-term labor assistance and development. For short-term disaster relief, the ISC suggests a donation to Partners in Health, which you can get to by www.standwithhaiti.org/Haiti. And once again, you can go to iww.org and look for the link in the upper left-hand corner at iww.org. Bill?
Oh, by the way, Carl communicates again via Facebook. We're going to have to get a Skype thing happening for Carl to participate. Anyway, he says that he hopes that Jobs of Justice is pointing out that Cheryl Jackson is the only anti-war candidate for Obama's Senate seat.
Thank you, Carl. I forgot to mention her name when I was mad about the AFL-CIO's endorsement for the U.S. Senate.
And anyway, in the February 2nd primary, take a Democratic ballot and vote for her. He is also appalled that the AFL-CIO endorsed Alexei Giannoulias, a pro-war corporate Democrat, as David said. And in a second here, I need to get – we have a report from Neil Parthon on schools. Neil works in Rand Tool as an educator. And anyway, he says, local economies are in trouble too. Champaign school officials will consider cutting all departmental budgets, foregoing the purchase of new equipment, and eliminating jobs across the district when they begin talking about budget cuts. The state underfunding of its own mandated programs has helped to bring this on. School officials have not been told what to expect in terms of state funding, but the state has not been able to pay all the money due to the school districts this year for services such as special education and transportation. In addition, the Champaign School District will see a much smaller increase in property tax revenue next year. It received more than $4 million in additional property tax money this year. That amount is likely to be about, or it received more than, okay, so that amount is likely to be about $1.5 million next year, said Chief Financial Officer Gene Logis. Most of the district's expenses, about 82%, are salaries and benefits. About three-quarters of the necessary budget cuts will come from jobs, Logis said. The district must notify employees of layoffs in March. It always lays off grant-funded staff until it knows whether the state will provide the grant money for the coming school year. But this year, the layoffs will go beyond grant-funded positions, Logis said. They will also forego buying new capital updates like vans or kitchen equipment. The school board has had to use its fund to help balance the budget shortfalls. Monticello, which is a pretty wealthy little community out by me, is in similar straits, owed over $350,000 by the state, but also having declining corporate tax receipts. Superintendent Vic Zimmerman said that with the current financial figures and no changes to the district's budget, the education fund, the district's largest fund, will be $1.1 million in the red next fiscal year.
And that's just for Monticello.
Oh, and by the way, he also says that the Campus Faculty Association is organizing four coordinated furlough days to amplify the negative affect and show that budget cuts hurt. They're talking about, they were using the word common furlough, and I suggested that they call it the general furlough.
Yeah, that'd be more appropriate. Tom?
Get in touch with the labor movement's fighting spirit at the Labor Notes Conference. Plan now to attend. The Labor Notes Conference, organizing a rank-and-file recovery, will take place from April 23rd to April 25th, 2010, in Detroit, Michigan, actually in Dearborn, Michigan, at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. It's Labor Notes Conference, organizing a rank-and-file recovery from April 23rd through 25th, 2010, in Detroit, or rather Dearborn.
Do they have a website there, Tom?
Yes, www.labornotes.org.
Oh, that's easy enough to remember.
Okay, and I have an email message from a WEFT member named Harry Calkins. Thanks for being a member, Harry. And this is kind of a lead into something we talked about. The recent Supreme Court decision is something labor unions need to start thinking about right away.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I've got a little something on that from Greg Palast a little bit here later in the show. I got one last public service announcement. This is from this is from Brian Dolliner. The IMC got an email from Anna Riggs of the BBC. Kraft Incorporated has just purchased Canberry, a major British company, and it's big news. The BBC is sending a camera crew to the U.S. here to Champaign, Illinois, because we have the largest Kraft plant in the country. So they want to interview anybody with knowledge of Kraft's labor practices and reputation. We did a small protest with Damian Matthew, Franklin Ridgeway, and Joe Barry, and they did get some coverage on the UCIMC.org website. And he's asking, can we get the contact for the No Kraft people up in Chicago? Otherwise, anybody here locally or anywhere for that matter that can get any information, maybe be interviewed on the BBC, call Brian on a cell phone. That's 517-621-5827. Again, that number is 217-621-5827. And he ends his message by stating, fight global capitalism in our own backyard.
Well, by the way, folks, I would like to mention that Kraft is kind of an example of the hitchhiker phenomena in the labor world, where the plant next door, which is owned by the same company, AC Humco, mm-hmm. Was a Teamster plant. Mm-hmm. And I've known a lot of people that worked at Kraft over the years, and one of the things was Kraft had pretty decent wages and benefits, mm-hmm. you know, probably largely because they've AC Humco next door.
Oh, indeed. That was an intentional policy. They always kept it slightly above Humco's. And, of course, the employees at Humco have really gotten the shaft. They were bought out, I think, by ADM, if I'm not mistaken. And the Humco plant and other unionized plants were closed, and the ones who weren't unionized were kept open. So there you go. It's not always about economics. It's about control and power. Anyway, in regard to the email, I got this from David Sirota, he says, by now I'm sure you've heard that the Supreme Court today not only reaffirmed that corporations are people, but that corporations may spend an unlimited amount of money to tilt election campaigns. This is a radical ruling, in the bad sense radical, that threatens the most basic fundamentals of American democracy. That's why I'm asking you to sign this petition for a constitutional amendment that would declare that corporations are not people. Sign the petition at the following link and then send this email on to as many people as you know. And that link is www.movetoamend.org. That's www.movetoamend.org. He continues by stating, we are living in a nation that, as I said in my first book, is the victim of a hostile takeover by big money interests. The Supreme Court ruling today will complete this hostile takeover and shred the last remnants of democracy in this country. In short, we will become a complete corporatocracy. Corporations are not people. They live forever and they can commit crime and cannot be put in jail. Moreover, the rights of personhood are not merely being extended to American corporations. This ruling means that foreign multinational corporations or governments can operate in the United States and will have more power over our election system than American citizens themselves. And what I mean by foreign governments is Greg Palast wrote an article about this week called it's titled Manchurian Candidates. Supreme Court allows China and other repressive governments like Burma and unlimited spending in U.S. elections. All they got to do is move here, set up a shell corporation in Delaware, which is just has a post office box, and they can start pumping millions, if not tens of millions of dollars to get certain candidates they don't like defeated and get candidates elected that are going to be paid off by them and other corporate interests. So, yes, this Supreme Court ruling, it's going in just everything. All these people in power right now, from the Supreme Court to the President Obama to the U.S. Congress and the Senate, are going in the exact opposite direction to where we need to be going. And it's time. We're fed up with it. I know Bill's fed up with it. I'm sure as heck fed up with it. And there's a lot of people out there fed up with it. And I'm telling you what, folks, we got to do something. I mean, we know what the problem is. Now we got to act. We got to educate. We got to agitate. We got to organize. And then we need to mobilize.
There's a lot of people out there who just plain don't know what's going on. And they need to be educated.
Well, you know, people that don't necessarily know what's going on know that there's something wrong. And you're right. That's where the education comes in. Yeah. We need to focus on who the real culprits are here. And the first thing I would tell people is stop watching the corporate media, because all they're going to do is to confuse you, distract you, misinform you, and lie you. They create their own artificial reality. Just like with this health care bill. They try to make it, you know, they always try to put it in linear terms. You know, it's like Carl Easterbrook, I guess, phrase this the right way, the range of limited debate. In other words, they're saying it's this or it's that. In other words, it's A or it's B. It's what the Democrats propose or what the Republicans,
we're not allowed to have C.
Well, and that that there's all these other, you know, potentially infinite other possibilities that aren't even discussed. Therefore, they don't exist. And that's the whole thing with this health care bill. They didn't even discuss single payer. In fact, they put people in jail that came to the Senate hearings to demand to be heard.
Right. When Baucus was having those committee hearings and stuff, they didn't want to hear alternative ideas, you know.
Well, yeah. And here's the thing. You know, single payer health care, or I like to refer to it as Medicare, expansion of Medicare for every man, woman, and child in this country, is what exists in every industrialized country in the world and even some lesser developed countries. It has a proven track record. It's been in existence in Germany for over 100 years, and you know, it's been in most of these other countries since the end of World War II. And so it has a proven track record. It works. Private health care does not work. There is just some things that the private sector cannot do, and when it, and, you know, markets don't have a heart or a conscience. Markets respond barely to basically supply and demand, but even then that can be subverted by monopolistic practices and corporate influence over our elected officials. So I'm so glad that the person sent that email and stuff, and that was very timely. I'm gonna play
I'm gonna bring something up. Anheuser-Busch is owned by a Belgian company. Now, will they be able to contribute to political campaigns or to candidates?
Yes.
But it's illegal for foreigners to do so.
Not if they have an American subsidiary corporation. You know, so, I mean, we're talking about some scary stuff here, you know. And the thing is that corporations need to be put on a leash, and it needs to be illegal. I mean, illegal for any corporate entity to make a donation to any political candidate. I think it even needs to be taken a step further and make lobbying illegal by corporations. You know, it's one thing if citizens go or citizens' organizations to discuss with their elected representatives. That's one thing. But for paid lobbyists from corporate interests to go to Washington, D.C. or Springfield, should be illegal, because it is undue influence. And of course, we all know how the system works. It's, you know, money to their campaigns to get elected or reelected. It's also the promise of jobs once they retire from public service. I mean, we're talking lucrative corporate jobs. It's also, you know, all sorts of other little perks, speaking engagement fees, and free golf trips to the Caribbean or whatever.
Yearly bonuses.
This has to all be illegal. And the other thing is that what has to go hand in hand with this is that every person running for political office, the corporate media that operates on our public airwaves, we give them a license, permission to operate in the public airwaves, must be required under penalty of law to provide every single candidate running for office equal access time in the media. Not more, not less. Every candidate having the same amount of time and opportunity to express their views. And this is, until this is, those two things are fixed, we're going to keep going down the tubes, folks. So anyway, I want to play a little music here from person who's been a labor organizer and is a musician. Bill's familiar with him, Cy Conn.
I've heard of him.
Yes, he's been organizing in the past in the West Virginia coalfields and stuff. Well, anyway, he's going to call in and be a guest on our show here in 2 weeks. And I was really surprised that he's actually, a musician as well. So we're going to play one of his songs here, and we'll be right back.
Out in the darkness, down at the breaker, close on the midnight hour. Steadily working, quietly leaving, trailing a thin line of powder. The little Schuylkill Valley town is all lit up tonight by flames that lick like tongues from the breaker fire. The tight-lipped coal and iron police won't get much sleep tonight, looking for the sons of Molly Maguire. Out in the tavern, banded together, strong men are hiding their sorrow. Over at Pottstown, they're at the prison, 10 men are hanging tomorrow. I only tried to organize the men I worked among, but I'm hanging in the barn, will you miss me? And Monday early, so they say, the mines will open back. The coal and iron police are drinking whiskey. Out in the darkness, standing together, 10 men are lined on the gallows, holding a red rose, waiting for sunrise, King of the Mollies, Jack Kehoe. The trap is sprung and Molly's sons are traveling into time, murdered by the man who hoped to hang her. But the unborn souls of Union men are all with her tonight.
Okay, we're back, and that was Cy Conn, who we're going to be interviewing on the show here in 2 weeks. But anyway, Bill, you know, this Facebook thing is really great. I love this interactive this with the listening audience out there.
Oh, yeah. And also, anyway, I want to make sure that I get in something for one of my conservative friends, Bob Z. And he says we need to change the leadership in the state. Okay, probably because it's all Democrats. But
well, I agree with that. Yes, indeed. Green Party. Which Whitney's running for governor?
That's again. Right. And I think he's going to be doing pretty well. Also, Neil Parthen brings up something that I was hearing on progressive talk radio shows yesterday. With corporations being people, can corporations marry? What do you think the Republicans' position would be on gay corporation marriage? And see, people were talking on these talk radio shows saying, well, if there's a merger between two corporations, is that the same as gay marriage? And then they were also saying, well, if one corporation buys another, does that mean they're committing slavery?
That's a good point. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, it's one thing for citizens or associations or churches or other groups that are representative of real people, of human beings, of citizens, to be considered people. But for an artificial entity that basically the whole sole purpose is to make money, to basically control our government and subvert our democracy, no. I don't care. You know, there's some people saying that, well, we shouldn't limit corporations' free speech either. Well, I'm sorry, but they're not people. The founders were not never would have foreseen this sort of abomination ever occurring. And, you know, of course, in the early days, every state in the union had laws on the books that gave it the power to revoke corporate charters if they found that they were acting against the public interest, and that's what needs to happen here. Yeah. The corporations need to be put on a leash. They need to be driven out of our halls of government, and if they continue to act up, they need to be given the equivalent of the death penalty, in a sense, by revoking their charters.
Yeah, well, those laws still exist. They're just not enforced, and I wanted to bring up something else, too. One thing is that Carl Estabrook also brings up that the First Amendment refers to free associations of people.
Correct.
Okay, now, WEFT is a 501c nonprofit. Mm-hmm. WEFT cannot lobby. WEFT cannot make political contributions. Mm-hmm. Your church, you know, this is a big deal. Your church, your preacher is not supposed to be able to get up there and endorse a candidate or do any other political activity. I mean, other than, say, like voter guides on issues. And that's the same way for nonprofit organizations. Well, I think right now they've just opened a gigantic can of worms, and there's going to be probably going to be some lawsuits, and there's going to be churches and 501c organizations. Another point that I want to bring up is that the Democrats will never compete with the Republicans for business money.
But they are.
Well, wait a minute, Dave. Or what will happen is that they will be the socially liberal party that's pro-business, while the Republicans are the socially conservative party that's pro-business. Now, another way this could go is that the Democrats could perhaps start serving their base and motivating their base to make up for the lost money either through individual donations or get out the vote efforts. And that is, if they're going to want me to do this stuff for them, then they need to start doing something for me instead of what's been going on the last, I'm going to say, 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. Either that, now this might also be a blessing in disguise in where we can get the Green Party happening,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Or some third party.
But it's going to end up, with this decision, what it's going to end up being is organized people versus organized money.
Very good point, Bill. But see, that's the situation we do have now. I mean, look at the Obama campaign. They had their cake and ate it, too. They had this huge, massive grassroots mobilization, but they took corporate money, too. And in the end, whose interests are they serving?
Yeah, who got bailed out?
Yeah, they served the corporate interests. Even though labor, all of organized labor, all the labor unions in this country gave Obama over $40 million. $40 million and millions of volunteer time knocking on doors, like we said earlier. And they haven't did nothing for organized labor. And $40 million, even amongst corporate contributions, is no small piece of change. That's a lot of money. But, you know, when it push came to shove, whose interests they serve? Not working people, every other corporate interest out there, from the healthcare industry, private health insurance, to pharmaceuticals, to the banks, to the oil companies, and the list goes on. I mean, and, this is an outrage. And we only have a minute here left. There's one public service announcement I forgot to mention. Tune in tomorrow from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast, Urbana Public Television, Comcast Channel 6 for Labor's View TV with host Jim Iman and yours truly. And tomorrow's show, we're going to have a film called Schmarta about the decline of the U.S. Clothing industry and textile industry. And it's a really good little documentary. We're doing an editing version of it, and then of course we have our usual commentary. So tune in tomorrow and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's View TV, Comcast Channel 6, 4 to 5 p.m.
And don't forget, this afternoon on WRFU is our friends Damian Matthews and Neil Parthens. What is it? Not Another Sports Show?
Correct.
At 2 p.m. And then what is that?
104.5.
Right, and there's also a fundraiser for the IFC and WRFU at
you,
the
Bill.
Clark Bar,
yes.
Monday from 6 to 9, and I will be there taking photographs, and somebody is calling me on the phone.
Okay, yes, and the Clark Bar is between State and Randolph on Clark Street, and we're waiting now for the air shifters for Close to the Fire, and we're going to leave you here with a little music that Bob Plesney provided today called Wildcat Whistle by Scott Miller, and we'll see you next week on the Illinois World Labor Hour.
State line. Men and boys were digging coal deep down in the Kentucky mines. All day they never see the sun, all night love moonshine.